For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, it's Real Life, Real Crime Daily for Friday, January 6th, 2023, and I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton. And y'all, this is actually the inaugural episode of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. We are going to be talking about the Idaho murders. And now, we want you to understand that we're not jumping on the bandwagon at the last second like everybody else, or we're not trying to play internet sleuths and all that stuff. And,
no, as a matter of fact, everybody was on the bandwagon, right, and we were shutting our mouths, right, and just biding our time.
Meaning that we have followed this since the beginning. For those of you who don't know me, I was a career law enforcement professional, and when I retired from law enforcement, I became a defense expert in law enforcement matters. And of course, I have the Real Life, Real Crime podcast, and
whoop whoop,
yeah, right. And Jim and I have another successful podcast, Bloody Angola.
Yeah. So I'm Jim Chapman. I am co-host of Woody on Bloody Angola, and also co-host on Woody with Real Life, Real Crime Daily, of which this is the inaugural. I'm gonna get that down one day, y'all. This is the inaugural edition of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. And a little bit about me. I've been a podcaster for 5 years now. Had a podcast called Local Leaders, and through that, me and Woody developed a brotherhood, I would call it, not a friendship. Absolutely. A brotherhood. Absolutely. And we wanted to do things together. I started producing Real Life, Real Crime. And then always we wanted to do a podcast. We started Bloody Angola together, and it has been love, love, love from all of our listeners. And through that, we've developed other podcasts. And one of those is what you're listening to right now. Now, on the law enforcement side of things, no, I'm not a law enforcement individual, and I get asked that question, believe it or not, y'all, almost every day. Someone says, "You're in law enforcement?" And I'm like, "No, I was not." Have nothing but respect for those guys in law enforcement, but I would consider myself a crime historian. I have studied crime since I was old enough to read, almost, and I always had this unique fascination with prisons and the criminal system. And Woody and I share something very similar, which is the criminal mind. Absolutely fascinates, yep, us.
Always has, always will.
So we're going to get into it and talk about what the entire probably world is talking about right now, and that is the Idaho murders. But we're going to give it to you from our perspective, which one thing we pride ourselves in is putting out factual information. That's why we held out so long.
Right, that's exactly right. Did not discuss this in depth. We've been naturally following the murders since it happened. And of course, we're going to get to that in a second, what I thought and what Jim thought ahead of time, and finally while we're doing this today. But let's start with what happened on Saturday, November the 12th. There were four college students that were murdered, brutally murdered, and their names were Ethan Chapin, and he's 20 years old. Madison Mogan is 21 years old.
You also have Zana Kernodle, who was 20, and Kaylee Goncaves, which is 21,
right?
Saturday, November 12th, Goncaves and Mogan, lifelong best friends. Okay, these girls have known each other since, right, they were babies. Yep. I mean, 9, 10 years old. They do what all 20-year-olds do. They went out to bars, and they went club hopping, like we used to do back when we were young, Woody.
Yep.
In downtown Moscow. And, you know, they're kind of putting a timeline together of how this stuff occurred, obviously, after the fact. But it was about 10 o'clock p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Those two particular ladies were seen clubbing at a place called the Corner Club Bar. And then they went to a eatery that's like a food truck, that overnight food trucks. Right. Who knew those existed?
That was about 1:40 a.m. The duo was seen on video at the Grub Truck, a local food vendor, and used a private party for a ride home, meaning they called a ride with somebody else. And
yeah, they
got back home.
They got an Uber, right? Basically.
And meanwhile, Chapin and Carnado, who were dating, went to the Sigma Chi house Saturday night.
Yeah, so Sigma Chi, y'all, is a fraternity that is on every college campus. Yeah, usually rich kids, wealthy kids.
I'm a Sigma Nu alum now, but I was a double legacy Sigma Chi from both my brothers at LSU.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
And, yeah, LSU has a legit Sigma Chi fraternity over there.
This is a college town, okay? And my kids are this age now, or just a little bit older, and I did the same thing back in my day. But the Chapin and Carnado got home around 1:45 a.m. But Chapin did not live at the house, but was sleeping over with his girlfriend.
Yeah, so he wasn't supposed to be there is the point that we're getting at here.
Right. Also, there were two other roommates who were in the house. They also went out in Moscow Saturday night and returned home by 1 a.m.
Everybody got home. There were six people in that house, and this was a three-story home. Very important to mention that if you can picture any college campus, they have these big, beautiful houses here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They're on Fraternity Row, and these are frat houses. Very similar in size to that. This is like $1 million home, right? But it's shared by six people, so the rent's cheap.
Rent's cheap.
You know, I lived in a...
I did the same thing.
Right? Yeah, when I was in college, I lived in a two-bedroom apartment with six dudes. Yeah, and so we paid like $100 a piece for rent like that. Right. That was fine.
They also had a dog, y'all, that was in the home at the time this occurred.
So they all go out. They get home. It's, you know, between 1 and 2 o'clock, like we all get home when we go out at night. And a lot of things took place. And I'll be honest with y'all, we've been following this case and working this case kind of behind the scenes for quite a while, just on our own, just doing like everybody else did, coming up with theories and things like that. But one thing we did not want to do, and before we go any further, we want to make comments on this, is we did not want to, A, ever accuse anybody of something as heinous as the murder of four young people that had nothing to do with it, or even raise an eyebrow in that direction. So Woody and I held off on giving our thoughts on this case. And shout out to Woody Overton, because I'll be honest, I was wanting to put something out there. I felt like, you know, look, we talk about crime. It's what we do. And he said, Jim, we're going to wait till the affidavit comes out and it's all accurate information. So,
right. I also believe that the whole world thought nothing was being done in the case and we're getting hit up with messages about it, et cetera. But I believe I was correct in the fact that they were actively working this and they were holding their cards close to their vests. What happened was at some point it became known that these four were murdered, right? Looking at it in the beginning without doing like everybody else was doing, jumping on and accusing this person and accusing that person and accusing this teacher and all this different stuff. I always felt from the beginning, I said a couple things and I told Jim, I said, listen, I would look, first of all, I don't believe that this person just randomly picked this house and murdered four people. It just doesn't happen like that. Secondly, I thought that this person probably did not live in the town, although they had some type of interaction with at least one of the victims, and maybe they were spurned by them or whatever it may be. And when they said the stabbings, and, you know, you kill four people with a knife, that's really doing something.
It's personal.
Right. It's personal. And they, I said at the time, I said, I bet you it was a K-bar knife, meaning, because they had said it was a large blade. And I believe that I told Jim, I said, I bet it was a K-bar, because all the murders that I've worked, where the stabbings were involved, people, when you stab someone violently, the assailant always cuts their hands, right? Because your hand slides down, you hit them with such force. Now, the K-bar was developed in 1942 for the military, and it's designed to kill. It has a 7-inch blade, but it also has the hand guard. So if you, it's, you know,
it's like a sword,
right? Almost, yeah, right. Almost
small a sword.
Small sword. If regular knife, you stab and your hand's going to slide forward. This one has the hand guard, so you don't get injured. I mean, it's designed to kill people.
It's one use. It ain't going to pump up your tire if you got a flat.
And I totally believe from the beginning that this person or people, because I was a little perplexed that you could kill four people and get away with it by yourself. Or
kill four people, period.
Right, right.
One of them being a male.
I always believed that this was a personal crime, like Jim said, and that this assailant or assailants, but the assailant at least knew or had some type of personal interaction or connection. You have to be pissed off to kill four people. Now, that being said, going into a home, you don't go into a home at 4 o'clock in the morning and just start killing people, right? I believe the killer went in looking for a specific victim and began killing as he, you know, woke up whomever, and it wasn't the right one. So that being said, that we held off and been watching and following it and wanted to do it, especially even after the rest. We're going to get into all that. The rest was made. We wanted to do it, but then when Jim and I agreed to wait on the affidavit, which would have more pertinent information, and we're going to start talking about it.
Well, it had facts.
Right.
And one thing, just to hammer this point down, is there was a lot of people. Look, I was right there with y'all. I was watching the video of the guy at the pizza place, right, and thought he looked weird hanging out behind him the whole time. And, right, and you know, surely this guy had to have something to do with it. They had a lady that was on TikTok accusing a teacher at the school of this heinous crime. The lady is suing her, and rightfully so, for defamation of character. Those type of things, that's dirty, y'all. That is dirty. And we have to remember, as people reporting this stuff and talking about these crimes, that we are implicating people every single time we say a name, and that's bullshit. You don't ever say someone did something and not have all the evidence in front of you to even back up the claim. Now, sometimes you can say, my thought is this person was involved, something like that. But some of these people were coming out and saying, here's your murderer.
Right.
Here's your
right.
murderer.
And ruin those people's lives.
Absolutely.
Right? Meanwhile, the true killer was
getting off on it.
Right. And certainly they were following it. And there's even the thing that, you know, somebody's trying to say this one guy on Reddit was the killer interjecting himself and all this stuff, but whatever, all speculation. But let me digress for a second. I know Jim and I's thoughts on this is we absolutely, our hearts break for these families and for these victims.
Totally break. I have kids close to this age. Woody has kids close to this age.
24-year-old, 22-year-old, 21-year-old. And, you know, the it could have been my daughters or my son, right? And so
horrible.
We pray for these families. It's unfortunate that, I mean, it's horrible that this happened, but it's unfortunate that the whole world's galvanized around this case and sensationalized because of these four young people in the prime of their lives, in the best years of lives, college, and you know, living their young adult lives or brutally taken from their families.
Well, and I'll say this, I think that's what makes us different. Woody Overton is, we're doing a live pretty soon, and we're going to be talking about some victims in that right. live. And our goal always, when we go into any story or anything you will ever hear out of us, is to highlight and do justice to the victims of that story and expose those individuals that are the wrongdoers.
Right. And let me tell you this, y'all. People following the story and everything else, and it's sensationalized. But I think truly people forget that these four young people were human beings who have mamas and daddies and brothers and sisters or whatever. They were loved, right? And they were real breathing human beings who were brutally murdered.
You're kids, man.
Right, kids, right?
Kids. One thing with me and Woody alike is, look, I picked up my first book on a serial killer at the age of 9, and I can tell you the name of the book. It was A Stranger Beside Me by Ann Rule, and I was hooked ever since on the criminal mind, and that was the story of Ted Bundy. And when I researched this guy after the fact, I said, that's Ted Bundy made over. His scenes in court that they're showing so far, he has the same attitude. Right. His eyes are big as saucers, just like Bundy's.
And smiled at his defense attorney when he
gets in the court. Sick.
Let me tell you something. If I'm up for four death penalty charges, I'm not smiling at anybody.
No.
Right?
And I'm not even looking up. I'm so ashamed.
But it all goes back into this person. I will go out on a limb and say that you don't just start killing four people, right? I think there's other things that are come to the light in his past. I also said this, that I believe the guy was either ex-military or
you law said that
enforcement,
right,
law enforcement or something like that. And we're going to skip around a lot on this, even before we get into the affidavit, because the facts that come out about the killer are that he was picked on in high school. He was heavy set, and a group of girls specifically picked on him and rode him pretty hard. Then he wanted to become an Army Ranger. So he starts working out in high school. He drops the weight. They've got a picture of him doing push-ups and all that. But guess what? He couldn't make it. I said that too. He might be someone who couldn't make it in the military or as a police officer. And guess what? He also tried to join one of the departments and couldn't get in, right? So then what does he do? He goes on to study criminal justice. Not only is this cat narcissistic, I bet you it's going to come out he's psychopathic.
You know, we've been waiting for this affidavit to bring this story to you. And me and Woody recorded for several hours some upcoming stuff that y'all are going to get. And the whole time we're looking through our cell phones, hoping this affidavit would come through so we could bring you what you've been asking for. And sure enough, about 6 o'clock, I shoot Woody a text and I said, "You won't believe what I got."
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ruben Patel with Patient Plus Urgent Care. These days, it can be hard to find the time and money to take care of yourself. We're here to help with our new Urgent Care membership. Starting at $20 a month, the same as your car wash membership, visit any of our locations for that scratchy throat, runny nose, fever, chills, or any injury. Visit patientplusuc.com/membership for more information. patientplusuc.com/membership.
And we forwarded it
immediately, and we decided instead of coming in at 9 or 10 this morning, we were here at 5.
At right? 5. And y'all, this is chilling. It is unbelievable what we are about to read you. And afterwards, we're going to give some comments on how well the police department, the FBI, the state police did in keeping this all from becoming public. But once we're done, you're going to realize why we never read this case ahead of time. And so, Woody, before we start reading it, it might be a good idea to explain to them what an affidavit
is. That's a great point. See, this affidavit, and I know most of y'all have read it by now, I can guarantee you, first of all, this is not all that law enforcement has, okay? This is only an affidavit to that states the probable cause to arrest this killer. The probable cause is 50% plus one. That's not beyond a reasonable doubt, okay? So they don't have to show all their cards yet. And I guarantee you, I bet you $1 million, they have a ton of more stuff that they didn't put in the affidavit. Now, why? Because it's still an ongoing case. And after arrests are made and stuff like that, you're always going to keep investigating, keep trying to gather more evidence. But this original affidavit is just enough to get a warrant signed by a judge for four counts of first-degree murder and four death penalty charges.
Yeah, so, and if you're curious as to why it took so long after his arrest to get this affidavit, just to explain that real quick, when this asshole was caught, he was in a totally different state, 2,500 miles away from where the crimes were committed. Now, the state where these crimes were committed was Idaho. In Idaho, they have a law, and that law states that in order for you to issue an affidavit of probable cause for an arrest and actually make that arrest, that gentleman, that asshole in this case, has to be in the state. He can't even read it as the accused until he's in the state. Right. So,
we're going to keep calling him an asshole and killer, but his name is Brian Koberger. All right. And I'm not going to use it a lot because I don't want to give any credence to him. Yeah. But y'all,
he's an asshole.
When we say asshole or killer, the accused, whatever, however we define it, his real name is Brian Koberger.
He's the only asshole in this story.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah. So we're going to get to how they arrested him, but he was in another state and they could not issue him the affidavit of probable cause until he was in the state of Idaho. That is their state law. And so they can't issue it to the public either.
And he had to waive extradition.
Yes.
To the state. And the only reason he did it, y'all, is because he's a psychopath and he wants to know what the cops had against him.
He's narcissistic.
He's thinking, I committed a perfect crime. I'm getting my PhD in criminology. I did this.
I'm smart.
And we're going to read you some of the stuff in the affidavit. And he was smart. But guess what? There's no such thing as the perfect crime or the perfect murder. You will always leave evidence.
It's springtime, boys. The grass is green, the birds are chirping, and the kids will be out of school soon. That makes it the perfect time to plan a family vacation. And we know from the stories we cover that this is not exactly the time to take the family to the Caribbean. You don't want to end up in the middle of some cartel drug shootout. So this year, it's time to take an international journey. And of course, a big international trip is just one reason to learn a new language with Rosetta Stone. You might have a different one. Maybe you want to connect with family or friends living overseas. Maybe you want to acquire a new skill for work or better understand a certain culture. Rosetta Stone has helped me have fun with my mother and at least have partial conversations in Italian after only a few lessons.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Intuitive process, you pick up a language naturally. Designed for long-term retention. Speech recognition, the true accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Rosetta Stone is convenient and an amazing value.
That's right, Woody. A lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Real Life Real Crime and Daily Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Sayonara.
Shout out to AstroPro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
My allergies are throwing my whole morning off. Do I sound different to you?
I love it. You sound like, it's that time of year there, bro.
I sound different to me. I feel like I'm in a submarine.
Yeah, well, have you tried AstroPro? It's faster, bro. Oh. All right. AstroPro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. AstroPro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. AstroPro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Hey, I use this, and you should too, Jim. Last weekend, I planted my garden, and it's that time of the year, and my allergies really kicked up with it, right? I use AstroPro every time my nasal allergies flare up, and I'm always amazed at how fast I'm back in the game, down on those rows, playing my stuff.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with AstroPro. Go to AstroProAllergy.com for a discount so you can AstroPro and go today. AstroProAllergy.com. It's faster, bro. Uses directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
AstroPro and go. Okay.
And in his case, it was a big one.
And Emma, but this guy is getting his PhD in criminology, and he's specializing in how to catch people using the, you know, the latest electronic means and all that. Well, guess what he does? And we'll get into it in a minute, but he thought he was covering himself perfectly.
Yes, and I have some comments to say about that at the end, but right, we're going to get into it.
This affidavit, when I read it, I was very impressed, and I've written a million of these myself. I can assure you that this was a collaborative effort between numerous law enforcement agencies, but Brett Payne is the corporal that from the Moscow Police Department who actually signed and was on the affidavit, okay? But this is one of the most impressive affidavits that I've ever read. And remember, this isn't going to be all of it, y'all, but this is, they want to make sure when they came correct for them, and there's more than enough probable cause. And again, now, if this affidavit was all they had, they'd be screwed, and I'll tell you about that at the end, but the below information is provided by Brett Payne, who is a duly appointed, qualified acting peace officer within the county of Littal, state of Idaho. Brett Payne is employed by the Moscow Police Department in an official capacity of corporal and has been a trained and qualified peace officer for approximately 4 years. Corporal Payne is being assisted by members of the Idaho State Police and the agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Okay, y'all, that's opening shot right there. The judge is going to read this. In case the judge didn't know who Brett Payne was, they want to let the judge know, hey, Brett Payne's legit. And even though he only has 4 years on the job, he's being back and assisted by
he's the most famous police corporal in America right now.
Hey, you know what? To let this guy run with it, being 4 years on the job and on the most sensational case probably in a long time. And as sad as sensational, but it is. But anyway, on November 13, 2022, at approximately 4 o'clock p.m., Moscow Police Department, Sergeant Blaker, and I, now that y'all, when it says and I, that's going to be
his words.
Brett Payne's words. Sergeant Blaker and I responded to 1122 King Road, Moscow, Idaho, hereafter the King Road residence, to assist with the scene security and processing of a crime scene associated with 4 homicides. Upon our arrival, the Idaho State Police forensic team was on scene and was preparing to begin processing the scene. MPD Officer Smith, one of the initial responding officers to the incident, advised he would walk me through the scene.
Officer Smith and I entered the King Road residence through the bottom floor on the north side of the building. Officer Smith and I then walked upstairs to the second floor. Officer Smith directed me down the hallway to the West bedroom on the second floor, which I later learned through Zana's driver's license and other personal belongings found in the room, was Zana Kernodle's hereafter Kernodle room. Just before this room was a bathroom door on the south wall of the hallway. As I approached the room, I could see a body, later identified as Kernodle's, laying on the floor. Kernodle was deceased with wounds which appeared to have been caused by an edged weapon.
Also in the room was a male later identified as Ethan Chapin, hereafter Chapin. Chapin was also deceased with wounds later determined. The autopsy report provided by Spokane, they stop it there and it says redacted, and that's going to be probably because there's some evidence in there that they don't want out yet. They're going to follow up on, but it was something to do with the autopsy report. Okay,
might have been the pictures. I wonder, Woody.
It could be that. It could be blood spatter or different DNA blood types found or whatever. It could be that fucking Koberger's shit, but we'll find out.
But we're going to tell you when there is a redacted stamp underneath something, because that's important that they left something out of that.
They left it out on purpose, and I can assure you that is for investigative purposes, that they're either following up on something or it's information that only the killer would know, all right? So it says, I then followed Officer Smith upstairs to the third floor of the residence. The third floor consisted of two bedrooms and one bathroom. The bedroom on the west side of the floor was later determined to be Kaylee Gonclave's room. I later learned from a review of Officer Nunez's body camera. There was a dog in the room when Moscow police officers initially responded. The dog belonged to Gonclave's and her ex-boyfriend, Jack DeCour.
I found out from my interview with Jack DeCour on November 13th, 2022, that he and Goncaves shared the dog. And that's very important, y'all. The dog was in a room by itself. According to family members, that dog was always in the room with Goncaves, whether she was in somebody else's room or not.
Right.
Officer Smith then pointed out a small bathroom on the east side of the third floor. This bathroom shared a wall with Madison Mogan's, hereafter Mogan bedroom, which was situated on the southeast corner of the third floor. As I entered this bedroom, I could see two females in a single bed in the room. Both Goncaves and Mogan were deceased with visible stab wounds. I also later noticed what appeared to be a tan leather knife sheath laying on the bed next to Mogan's right side when viewed from the door. The sheath was later processed and it had K-bar, USMC, that's United States Marine Corps, y'all, and the United States Marine Corps Eagle Globe and Anchor Insignia stamped on the outside of it. The Idaho State Lab later located a single source of male DNA using the suspect profile left on the button snap of the knife sheath, and that's very important.
Right. As part of the investigation, numerous interviews were conducted by Moscow Police Department officers, Idaho State Police detectives, and FBI agents. Two of the interviews included BF, they use initials to protect these people, included BF and DM. Both BF and DM were inside the King Road residence at the time of the homicides and were roommates to the victims. BF's bedroom was located on the east side of the first floor of the King Road residence.
So just to catch you up real quick, the officers walk in. They find four deceased individuals and two on the first floor that are still alive. Now, based on numerous interviews conducted by MPD officers, ISP detectives, and FBI agents, as well as my review of the evidence, I have learned the following. Here it goes. On the evening of November 12th, 2022, Chapin and Kernodle are seen by BF, one of the living individuals, at the Sigma Chi House on the University of Idaho campus at 735 Nez Prince Drive from approximately 9 p.m. on November 12th to 1:45 on November 13th. Pay attention to those times. BF also estimated that at approximately 1:45 a.m., Chapin and Kernodle returned to the King Road residence. BF also stated that Chapin did not live in the King Road residence, but was a guest of Kernodle.
Right. And Gonclaves and Mogan were at a local bar, the Corner Club, at 202 North Main Street in Moscow. Gonclaves and Mogan can be seen on video footage provided by the Corner Club between 10 p.m. on November 12th and 1:30 a.m. on November 13th. At approximately 1:30 a.m., Gonclaves and Mogan can be seen on video at a local food vendor called the Grub Truck at 318 South Main Street in downtown Moscow. The Grub Truck live streams video from their food truck on the streaming platform Twitch, which is available for public viewing on their website. This video was captured by law enforcement. A private party, blank.
Redacted.
Right, redacted, protecting them, y'all. Reported that he provided a ride to Gonclaves and Mogan at approximately 1:56 a.m. from downtown Moscow in front of the Grub Truck to the King Road residence.
Now, and one thing we do want to say, and look, one of the advantages of me personally doing this podcast with a former homicide detective is, as a detective, Woody, I would assume you start from the last people to see this person alive and Absolutely. Work your way backwards.
Right. You want to establish the timeline of what they were doing that night, where they were, and, of course, as seen in earlier stuff, everybody's jumping on videos and all that stuff. Non-trained investigators, people have never worked a homicide in their life, jumping on all this stuff. But, yeah, you're going back, you're establishing a timeline, and all this, even at it can't even really be called circumstantial evidence at this point. They're just simply establishing the timeline to what led up to what we're about to tell you.
And you can guarantee that that Uber driver or whatever it was interviewed.
Oh, yeah.
So DM and BF both made statements during interviews that indicated the occupants of the King Road residence were at home by 2 a.m. Very important. So they're all at home at this time and asleep or at least in their rooms by approximately 4 o'clock a.m. This is with the exception of Kernodle, who received a DoorDash order at the residence at approximately 4 o'clock a.m. And law enforcement identified the DoorDash delivery driver who reported this information.
You better believe they sweated him pretty hard, too, or him or her pretty hard. All right, so DM stated she originally went to sleep in her bedroom on the southeast side of the second floor. DM stated she was awoken at approximately 4 a.m. by what she stated sounded like Gonclaves playing with her dog in one of the upstairs bedrooms, which were located on the third floor.
4 o'clock.
Right. At a short time later, DM said she heard who she thought was Gonclaves saying something to the effect of, "There's someone here." A review of the records obtained from a forensic download of Kernodle's phone showed this could also have been Kernodle, as her cellular phone indicated she was likely awake and using the TikTok app at approximately 4:12 a.m.
Now, if y'all could see me right now, I'm goosebumped to death.
Right.
This is where it's finally coming out. And, you know, we will never know if that was a TikTok app that was saying there's someone here.
Right.
I don't think so.
No,
I think one of them saw him hiding somewhere. That's total conjecture, but
or
just heard my
him
fault.
Going down the hall or something like
it's
that.
It's awfully convenient.
Right. But you know, that's a chilling moment.
Chilling.
Because you know, they're at home. They got the DoorDash delivery at 4. They hear what appears like somebody playing with a dog. Well, I don't think too many people are playing with their dog at 4, after just shortly after 4 a.m. in the morning.
After going out drinking on.
Right.
You know, having fun.
But they hearing something. And we know that Kernodle was on her phone on TikTok at 4:12 a.m.
So DM stated she looked out of her bedroom, but did not see anything when she heard the comment about someone being in the house. DM stated she opened her door for a second time. And I want y'all to kind of try to picture this. It's pitch black. She opens that door when she heard what she thought was crying coming from Carnotto's room. DM then stated she heard a male voice. Holy shit, y'all. A male voice say something to the effect of, "It's okay. I'm going to help you."
Yeah. All right. Now, listen, the whatever deity DM prays to, that and it's going to continue. You know, I always teach people, if you get that little feeling or you feel like something's wrong, that's whatever deity you pray to is trying to cut you a break. Now, she's already heard what she thought may have been the dog or someone say there's someone here. Then it bothers them or her to a point where she actually gets up and looks out of her bedroom and she doesn't see anything after she hears the comment about someone being in the house. But then she hears the crying and she opens the door a second time.
Gets out of bed.
Right, gets out of bed again now. And this is, y'all, this is after 4 o'clock in the morning. She gets out of bed and she hears, "It's okay, I'm going to help you." Why would anyone need help?
Medicaid members, keep your coverage. Update your address, email address, and cell phone number to receive information regarding your benefits. Act now. If you get a letter from Louisiana Medicaid, read it and respond as soon as possible. For more information or to update your info, call the number on your insurance card or visit healthy.la.gov. That's healthy.la.gov. Remember to update all required information before Medicaid deadlines so you don't lose your coverage.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Here we go, y'all. At approximately 4:17 a.m., a security camera located at 1112 King Road, a residence immediately to the northwest of 1122 King Road, picked up a distorted audio of what sounded like voices or a whimper, followed by a loud thud. A dog can also be heard barking numerous times starting at 4:17 a.m. The security camera is less than 50 feet from the west wall of Carnotto's bedroom.
And it had to be close to pick up the sound, right? But the loud thud, voices or whimper, followed by a loud thud.
And a dog barking.
And then the dog starts barking. Now, I have numerous dogs, right? They're the best alarm system in the world. And they also know when something's wrong. So DM stated she opened her door for the third time after she heard the crying and saw a figure clad in black clothing and a mask that covered the person's mouth and nose walking towards her. DM described the figure as 5'10 or taller, male, not very muscular, but athletically built with bushy eyebrows. The male walked past DM as she stood in a frozen shock phase. The male walked towards the back sliding glass door. DM locked herself in her room after seeing the male. DM did not state that she recognized the male. This leads investigators to believe that the murderer left the scene.
So many things to say about this, y'all. First of all, is information just released. Both of the two things we just told you, nobody knew that a security camera picked up sounds from the bedroom.
Right.
Certainly nobody knew that this guy had eyes on him. And I want y'all to, it's very important that we stop and we picture this. You're on the first floor. You've heard enough things that you're curious what's going on.
I'm here to help you. Somebody playing with the dog.
Somebody's in here.
Crying.
All those sorts of things. She goes, she looks.
Three times.
Peeks down the hallway. It's dark, y'all. All the lights are out. And she sees a figure walking up to her with a freaking mask on. Right. Walks right past her, and she is frozen. So she's standing in the doorway as he walks past her. I would venture to say she's not moving. She's not breathing.
Right.
She might even have her eyes halfway closed, scared. Because, y'all, let me tell you something. All he had to do was look to his left or right, whichever side she was standing on, and she would be dead.
Absolutely. You kill four, you're certainly going to kill a fifth. You're not going to leave. The dead people can't get on stand and testify you have bushy eyebrows.
Now, we have to address this, Woody, before we go any further, because I know what every single person out there is thinking right now, which is exactly what I was thinking. Why then did she not call the police right away after all this has happened and she saw a guy walk through with a mask? The true answer for me is I don't know. The only thing I do know is this was considered a party house. And you know, like we all partied at certain people's houses when we were younger. And you just don't tie that into somebody got killed. They had alcohol in their system. So, I mean, look, I've been drunk and blown a lot of things off that were weird.
I think that more about this is going to come out. The certainly nobody, you know, being a party house or whatever, but nobody thinks that four people have just been brutally murdered upstairs, even though they heard crying, even though they hear the dog barking and all that stuff. She still, a dude coming out with a mask covering your mouth and nose, that's fucking pretty damning. But
it's hindsight is always y'all. Absolutely. Because I certainly think if this girl had known what happened, she would have picked up the phone and called the police.
Absolutely. But
we can't answer why she didn't go up there and check on them.
But we can tell you, and that she stated that she got up three separate times because she felt something was wrong.
Yes.
Right? Now, and she sees this dude, I bet you there's more coming out. Remember, y'all, I told you this is a probable cause warrant or affidavit. They're not going to show their full cards because for a lot of reasons. It's active, ongoing investigation. They're trying to gather as much information as they can. It's a death penalty case. And they're not going to give this asshole any more information than they have to. Remember, I told you there's no perfect crime. There's shit that he fucked up. And one of them is leaving DM alive.
Yes. And so
she went in fight, flight, or freeze. When she sees him coming down the hallway, we don't know. I firmly believe he didn't see her. He'd have killed her. Right. But she's not saying she didn't say she saw him carrying a knife dripping with blood or anything like that. Or we don't know that yet.
Right.
Right.
But the question will always be, he had a mask on and it's not Halloween time.
Right.
We don't know, y'all. And we're not going to throw accusations or conjecture. I don't know. If it were me, I'm a fight kind of guy. I'm not a flight or a freeze kind of guy. And naturally, I'd have jumped on the guy that said, who the hell are you in the house? But
anytime,
and I'll probably be dead.
Anytime your brain feels threatened, that your body's going to automatically go, your physiology automatically goes into fight, flight, or freeze. And it's, you know, everybody's different. She froze, and I think had she run, she'd be dead.
Had she fought, she would be dead.
So again,
she did the right thing.
Whatever deity was watching out for her, cut her a huge break. But
amen.
I bet you, as this case goes on, and we'll update you in the future on it, that we're going to find out more information about DM and what she saw and why she didn't call immediately.
Yes, and one last thing on that point to keep in mind, folks, every room in this house had its own keypad lock,
right,
and they did not know each other's passwords to their doors,
right,
so or passkeys. So even if she would have went up that those stairs to check on them, she couldn't get in the door. Yes, right. She could have banged on the door and then figured out nobody's coming to the door. Maybe she would have seen something on the second or third floor, blood or something like that.
She knows something.
But she couldn't. One thing she did know, I can't get in the room if I wanted to.
Right. But it's also after, I mean, come on, man, the guy in the mask, there's going to be more that's going to come out about this. And we'll leave it at that. But she knew enough that something was wrong enough to get up three separate times. And then she sees the guy. But I bet you $1 million more. Remember, this is just enough. They're putting just enough information in here to build the
to
case
arrest
for
him.
Probable cause, right?
Yes.
So the combination of DM statements to law enforcement, reviews of the forensic downloads of records from BS and DM's phone, and video of a suspect video, as described below, leads investigators to believe the homicides occurred between 4 a.m. and 4:25 a.m.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that.
During the process in the crime scene, investigators found a latent shoe print. This was located during the second processing of the crime scene by the ISP forensic team by first using a presumptive blood test and then amino black and protein stain that detects the presence of cellular material. The detected shoe print showed a diamond-shaped pattern similar to a pattern of Vans-type shoe sole just outside the door of DM's bedroom located on the second floor. This is consistent with DM's statement regarding the suspect's path of travel. Now, stick with me on this one. This means there were bloody footprints, okay? That's what it was tested for. That when they say latent shoe print, well, guess what? I mean, my college houses were dirty, but it wasn't so dirty. You're going to have shoe prints walking through it, right? And the very fact that they tested it using a presumptive blood test and then amino black, a protein stain, so that basically what they're saying without saying it is, it's a bloody footprint or print found right in front of DM's door where she was standing, and she sees him.
So that tells you she's telling the truth.
Absolutely.
And not only that, just to expand on that, that evidence in and of itself is virtually worthless without knowing who the guy is. And the reason for that is every college kid on campus has a pair of Vans. Hell, I got a pair of Vans. Right. I've been out of school a long time. But if you have a suspect, it is beautiful evidence because you can tie those shoes into that suspect. Right.
And especially if you get lucky enough to recover the shoe at some point. And I'm sure they're doing the DNA testing on the shoe prints, et cetera. But I would suggest you it's probably just victim's blood.
And to tell you how important prints are, whether it's shoe prints or tire prints, we did a story on the serial killer Sean Vincent Gillis on the Bloody Angola series, and he was caught by tire prints.
Exactly.
So old school police work right there.
Right. So as part of the investigation, an extensive search, commonly referred to in law enforcement as a video canvas, was conducted in the area of the King Road residence. This video canvas was to obtain any footage from the early morning hours of November 13, 2022, in the area of the King Road residence and surrounding neighborhoods in an effort to locate the suspect or suspects' vehicles traveling to or leaving from the King Road residence. This video canvas resulted in the collection of numerous surveillance videos in the area from both residential and business addresses. I have reviewed numerous videos that were collected and have had conversations with the other MPD officers, ISP detectives, and FBI agents that are similarly reviewing footage that was obtained. A review of camera footage indicated that a white sedan, hereafter suspect one vehicle, was observed traveling westbound in the 700 block of Indian Hill Drive in Moscow at approximately 3:26 a.m. and westbound on Steiner Avenue at Idaho State Highway 95 in Moscow at approximately 3:28 a.m. On this video, it appeared suspect vehicle one was not displaying a front license plate.
Now, it's important to mention that in Idaho, they have a law where you have to have a license plate on both the front and back of the vehicles.
Right.
That the advantage to that from a law enforcement perspective is that no matter which vehicle, which way the vehicle is facing, you have access to get those plates. However, he did not have a front license plate. Most definitely removed it.
Right.
That right there in and of itself is suspicious.
Right.
So one other thing we want to point out with this is in the difference between how cases are solved now and how they were solved. And, you know, when Woody Overton was working, detectives now are great. But I tease a lot of times and I say back when Woody was a detective, they were real detectives. And I don't mean that they're not now. What I mean by that is it's a heck of a lot easier to solve a case when you've got a video canvas where you can actually track a car.
Everybody's got a Ring doorbell video and stoplight cameras and all that. And we didn't have any of that back in my day. Yeah, there's a lot about in this affidavit about the routes in the video. And we're going to touch on some of it.
There are several pages, y'all, of them following him doing this video canvassing pretty much from 4:20 in the morning on, and we're not going to read you all of that because it might get a little long for you. So what we're going to do is we're going to skip forward to how they came up with the vehicle. And that is something else in this case that is very important.
Real quick, they got the suspect vehicle leaving that area and arriving in Pullman, Washington, which is approximately 10 miles from Moscow, Idaho. And both Pullman and Moscow are small college towns.
So that's how they kind of tied it into the two colleges. And there is like one road to describe this that it was very common for these two colleges to travel back and forth here in Louisiana.
People going back to bars and partying.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Here in Louisiana, in the Baton Rouge area, we have LSU. Probably about 30 minutes away is Southeastern Louisiana University. Guaranteed, every weekend, people from Southeastern are driving to Tigerland.
And LSU goes to Southeastern on Thursday nights.
Yeah, period. So this is common. The police know that. And there is a specific road that they travel on to go back and forth. He went down this road the entire way.
They're able to follow what's became known as suspect vehicle one, this route.
That route.
Which will become very important later on.
Now, this is intriguing, and we're going to pick it up here. If you want to read the other stuff, we're going to link the actual affidavit to this audio, but in the description. Now, after reviewing the numerous observations of suspect vehicle one, the forensic examiner initially believed that suspect vehicle one was a 2011 to 2013 Hyundai Elantra. Upon further review, he indicated it could also be a 2011 through 2016 Elantra. As a result, investigators have been reviewing information on persons in possession of a vehicle that is 2011 to 2016 white Hyundai Elantra. Now, why that is so important is I did not realize they have investigators at the FBI that are their sole purpose at the FBI is to determine year, makes, and models of vehicles.
Right.
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with my life in a book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And that's, you know, crimes, whether you're transporting drugs or murders or whatever, people have to get from point A to point B. But this guy has a long history, over 35 years of doing it, et cetera. And it's very important that they narrow it down to this, and especially when suspect one's vehicle went back to the other college town. And so then they start running plates.
Yeah, so they start their investigation. If you'll remember, it wasn't too long ago. As a matter of fact, it might have been a week before he was arrested. They even released that they knew that the suspect was in a 2011 to 2016 white Honda Elantra. So they were given access, the investigators, to the footage on the Washington State University campus located in Pullman, Washington. A review of that video indicated that at approximately 2:44 a.m., this is important, on November 13th, 2022, a white sedan, which was consistent with the description of the white Elantra, was observed on WSU surveillance cameras traveling north on Southeast Nevada Street at Northeast Stadium Way at approximately 2:53, which is consistent with the description of the white Elantra. So basically what they're doing is that's what time he left his house to go kill these beautiful people.
And then later on, then they, you know, like we told y'all, they tracked him back to Pullman, and approximately 5:25 a.m., a white sedan, which is consistent with description of suspect vehicle one, was observed on 5 cameras in Pullman, Washington, and on the WSU campus cameras. And so, y'all, they basically, they tracked him all the way back.
He's coming back home after the murders. And at 5:27 a.m., he was observed on cameras traveling northbound on Stadium Way at Grimes Way Stadium Drive. So yeah, they basically have him going all the way back to that university.
There's certainly an hour's difference of time. It's only 10 minutes away. It's pure conjecture on my part, but I would expect that he did something with evidence in between. He made a stop.
Maybe to clean up.
Right, to clean up or get rid of evidence, the knife or whatever it may be. November 25th, 2022, MPD asked area law enforcement agencies to be on the lookout for the white Hyundai.
A bolo.
A bolo. Be on the lookout for the white Hyundai. And a Washington State University PD officer actually came to find out that they went to look at all white Hyundais that were registered, and it turns out that
on their campus. So the vehicle was registered to a Brian Koberger, and it was approximately 3/4 mile from the intersection of Stadium Way and Cougar Way. They actually picked up this vehicle again and found out where the location was the same day at approximately 12:58 a.m. Washington State University officer Curtis Whitman was looking for a white Hyundai Elantra and located a 2015 Elantra at the Pullman parking lot apartment complex that houses WSU students. So I want to make a point here, and that is shout out to these police officers of these college campuses that were actually pulling records. They're working this thing. Woody Overton was a Southeastern Louisiana University police officer. That's right. And I don't care where you work. These guys were doing FBI-style surveillance. They were driving all over the campus looking for this vehicle. And all of them did a great job. They had
the vehicle returned to the area, suspect vehicle returned to that area. Certainly, evidently, there wasn't a camera of him getting out of the where he got out of the vehicle, et cetera. But they found the vehicle registered to Koberger, and they knew he lived. They pulled his driver's license picture. He's 6 foot, weighs 185 pounds, and he has the bushy eyebrows. His physical description was consistent with the description of the male that DM saw inside the King Road residence.
Now, the next thing we want to mention, and we're going to skip through a little of this because it gets redundant, but let me tell you something. He may have been a student and seeking his doctorate in criminal justice, but this guy was no driver, that's for sure. He must have got pulled over 20 times for speeding and following too close in between when he was caught and the time in which he committed the murder. I mean, you can go through and read through that, y'all, but he was pulled over for speeding. It must have been 20 times, and they have this on record.
On a couple of them and get them out of the way, that his father came and they drove across country, and they got stopped like two times within 15 minutes. This is on record. And
for following too close.
And the excuse was we were talking about, a SWAT thing in the state of Washington or whatever.
The point we're trying to make with that is you're not too much of a brainiac if you've killed four people and you can't even watch your speed. That is an arrogant son of a bitch right there. Wow. You killed four people and you are so convinced you got away with it, you're not even worried about speeding or getting pulled over or following too close behind people. That ought to show you right there the arrogance of this guy.
Well, I agree. Certainly to a certain extent, but let's talk about real quick. After the murders, within, I believe it was 5 days, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, he actually switches the registration on his car.
Well, his registration, yes, he does. He switches it from the state that his parents lived in to the state that he lives in college.
And that's not a coincidence, y'all. That is him thinking he's smarter. Hey, I'll outsmart him. If they have the license plate, Pennsylvania plate, then I'm a registered to Washington. So it can't come back to the same car.
Moving along in this, investigators believe that Koberger is still driving the 2015 white Elantra. And this blew my mind, y'all, of all the things I read. Because his vehicle was captured on December 13th, 2022 by a license plate reader in Loma, Colorado. The Elantra was queried on December 15th by law enforcement in Indiana. On the 16th of December at approximately 2:26, he was found in Albertsville, Pennsylvania on surveillance video. So they actually have cameras that will alert when it picks up license plates.
Only because the license plate has been entered into the computer system, and these cameras that read these plates automatically send the location. This is a vehicle that you wanted us to watch out for.
So they start researching him, and based off of information provided by Washington State University's website, he was currently a PhD student in criminology at Washington State. Pursuant to records provided by a member of the interview panel, they learned that Koberger's past education included an undergrad degree in psychology and cloud-based forensics. These records also showed that Koberger wrote an essay when he applied for an internship with the Pullman Police Department in the fall of 2022. Koberger wrote in his essay he had an interest in assisting rural law enforcement agencies with how to better collect and analyze technological data in public safety operations. He also posted a Reddit survey, which can be found as an open source internet search. The survey asked for participants to provide information to understand how emotions and psychological traits influence decision-making when committing a crime.
Yeah, this is no different than killers or serial killers injecting themselves into their own investigations. This guy is, I guarantee you, he had a fascination with killing or crime, and he's going in and learning all the best stuff. His wanting to help small departments, that's bullshit. He's gaining knowledge for what he's ultimately going to do. I'm going to prove that to you here in a second. He wants to know how to circumvent and what the latest tools are law enforcement's using, and he even wants to understand how they think.
That's right. So Now it gets really interesting, because you're going to see some of the side of Koberger that was the thinking side of this asshole. And on November 13th, so the nights of the murders, between 3 and 5 o'clock, these police, now they're in the cellular section of this investigation. Right. So what's the first thing you would do after you've got a suspect? You're relatively confident that he committed the crime. Now you're gathering evidence. The first thing you're going to do is go to cell phone records. You start checking towers, see what it's pinging off of, that sort of thing, so you can establish and prove that he was in an area where that crime was committed.
Right.
November 13th, 2022, between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock a.m., after determining Koberger was associated with the Elantra and the phone number, investigators reviewed search warrant returns. A query of the phone in these returns did not show the phone was utilizing cellular tower in proximity of the residence between 1 o'clock and five.
And that simply goes back to, he knows to turn his fucking phone off. All right. And,
Put it on airplane mode.
And he didn't, he did it deliberately. But yeah, that, you know, his defense will have a field day with that. Say, oh, he wasn't even there, but that's bullshit. He knows how to do it. He's had the training and the experience in this technology. He turned it all. But where he fucked up is when they go back and they dig into cell phone records historically for this cat, he didn't turn it off the other 12 times he was near that residence in the month and a half before the murder.
That's exactly right.
Which goes to show he had some type of personal connection with one or more of the victims in that house. He surveilled it. He was there. Whatever, if it was a fantasy he's acting out, whatever it may be, one of them may have, you know, told him, hey, go shave your fucking eyebrows. I'm never going to be with you. You're a dirtbag. Whatever it may be, he was there by the King Road residence 12 times at least in the month and a half before the murder. And he wasn't smart enough to turn his fucking cell phone off then.
That's right.
Right?
So
Great detective work.
And so we're going to just give you a quick little timeline on that. If you want to read about all the cell phone pinging and everything, again, we're going to link the actual affidavit to the description of this audio. But we're going to bring you back to that night, and we're going to read to you as they're following the white Elantra on these cell phone pings. Now, approximately 2:47 a.m., the 8458 phone number.
That's his.
Stops working on the network or stops reporting.
It turns off.
This is consistent with either a phone being in an area without cell coverage, the connection of the network is disabled, such as putting the phone on airplane mode, or the phone is turned off.
Or he could have left it somewhere else. Yeah. Right.
The 8458 phone does not report to the network again. So important, y'all. Until approximately 4:48 a.m., at which time it is utilizing cellular networks that provide coverage on Highway 95 south of Moscow near Blaine, Idaho.
This, y'all, that's the same route that they've already established the white Hyundai took.
So if I'm a detective, I see this phone go off basically at 2:47 a.m. I know that the murders took place between 4 and 4:30, and at 4:48, the phone comes back on in the morning.
When it's on the interstate headed back towards Pullman, Washington.
Yes, in the morning. Now, at 4:48 in the morning, you don't work the next day.
Right.
You're going home. Where the hell you been?
Right.
So that right there, to me, I'm like, this is him. So very important and great detective work there, because you have to get search warrants for every single time that you pull someone's phone records.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's not easy to do those. AT&T and them don't give them up easily, like, I can assure you. But to go back in and establish that timeline, it's huge to go back and establish that he was that phone, the 8458 phone, was at or right close to the residence 12 times in the month and a half for the murder is huge.
Huge. And the fact that it was turned off at 2:47 a.m. and put back on at 4:48 a.m. the night of the murders is huge.
Put back on the route back to his residence.
Yeah. So at this point, y'all, these detectives are saying, we got our guy.
Right.
He is dead to rights. They're still waiting on DNA shit, but in their mind, I have to agree with them, they have some pretty damning evidence of circumstantial nature here.
Right. Pretty well, not circumstantial, but the DNA that would be direct is the DNA on the K-Bar knife sheath, even though it was alleged to be his father's. But why?
It's familiar DNA.
Why would that DNA be inside the murder scene by the dead bodies?
Now, the crappy thing about all that, y'all, is it is obvious to me that this guy did this. But, the defense attorney is going to try to say things like, well, you know, someone stole his knife sheath.
Yeah. You want to give me one more second and we'll punch the defense holes in it. So on December 27th, 2022, Pennsylvania agents recovered the trash from the Coburg family residence located in Albright, Pennsylvania. That evidence was sent to the Idaho State Lab for testing. On December 28, 2022, the Idaho State Lab reported that a DNA profile obtained from the trash and the DNA profile obtained from the sheath identified a male as not being excluded as the biological father of the suspect profile. At least 99.9998% of the male population would be expected to be excluded from the possibility of being the suspect's biological father. Based on the above information, I'm requesting an arrest warrant, da da da. All right, so to Jim's point, all right, remember, y'all, this is just probable cause. I guarantee you they got a bunch more. But it's still probable cause. This is still 50% plus.
Oh, there's no doubt.
And the judge that signed the warrant, he dead ass got it right. This corporal dead ass got it right. The people all the law enforcement agencies that helped in this investigation, tracking them across the country to the cell phone records to the FBI identifying the vehicle. Great work. Absolutely great work. But guess what, people? It's not over. They are not going to arrest this cat. No, they arrested him on probable cause, but they are not going to arrest him just on probable cause. They know they have a case, but they're playing the cards close to the vest. Flip side of it is, yes, the a defense attorney. One of the reasons they're playing it close to the vest is because they don't want the defense attorney to get too much ammunition too far ahead of time before it's a total slam dunk. But yeah, they can say, you know, his daddy did it, or you know, left the sheep in the bed, or somebody planted it on him. You know, a lot of people have bushy eyebrows. A lot of people drive white Hyundai Elantras. His phone, you know, he
a lot of people wear bands,
right? Yeah, right. A lot of people wear bands and all that. I submit to you, they have a hell of a lot more than what they've released.
Yeah, and what they have so far is pretty damn. And look, it's in and of itself, every single piece of that evidence can be explained away. But I would submit to you that when you put it all together and all of it fits one individual, that individual is screwed and tattooed in a lot of cases. I have no – reading this affidavit, I personally have no doubt that this guy did it. And the cell phone records for me were the slam dunk. The DNA was the double slam dunk. It's just too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence.
DM seeing, hearing everything, and then seeing the bushy eyebrow.
Yeah, you've got someone on the scene that described it.
I bet you they're going to come back. The bloody footprint's going to be the same size as this asshole. There's going to be so much more. Even though the K-bar knife is designed so when you're brutally stabbing somebody that you don't cut yourself, I'd still be surprised if he doesn't have some DNA. Although, you know what? There had to be a lot of blood. And I'm not trying to be gory. I'm just
it was so much that you can pull up pictures of it leaking out of the house.
Really?
Yes.
I'm coming from a homicide detective's mind. When you have that much blood on the scene, then the blood – of the suspect blood and the victim's blood will get mixed together. And you can't just obtain a DNA profile from anything, like a mixture of the blood, whatever. Sometimes, yes, but most of the time, no. But they are going to come back. And they, one of the things they're going to do is now that they have him, I'm sure they're going to try to question him, and I'm sure he's going to tell them to go pound sand. I got a lawyer, right, because he's smart, remember? And he knows the system. He thinks he's going to be there or whatever. They're going to try to question him. They would try to lock him into the statements of, have you ever been inside the residence? Well, no. Then, you know, that's – I'm sure he's refusing to talk. But they've got more stuff, y'all. But this is great work.
It's great work.
Shout out to all those people that did it. But I'm gonna go back to the victims. It is an absolute tragedy that this psychopathic asshole, for whatever reason, and I'm telling you, it's going to come back. One of them shot him down at some point or did something to offend him. That maybe one of them he was attracted to, that it caught his eye or whatever, and he started falling. But 12 times before the murder, he was there at least doing surveillance. Or he could have been there visiting. We don't know. But he's got shit to answer for. And the death penalty, you know, all these people that say they're against the death penalty, me personally, I don't care what you believe. Me personally, I'm for it. This guy took four beautiful young people off the face of this earth and destroyed so many hundreds of lives of people that love these victims, and he doesn't deserve to breathe.
And incidentally, if you're curious, Idaho does have the death penalty.
That's right. Me personally, I believe it should be given to you the same way that you got it, right? They shouldn't just put a needle in your arm, put you to sleep. I think somebody
should let the fathers in there, yeah, and the mothers.
With K-bars. Yeah, and but you know what? We're going to keep you updated on this.
Yeah, and I want to say one more thing. You know, we didn't cover how he was arrested, had all this evidence, and he decided to travel across country. This is a strange situation, but
people are going to want to know about this.
But I'm going to unpack this for you. His dad, okay, they lived in Pennsylvania. His mom and daddy, and that's where he grew up or whatever. His dad flies to his town, and they kind of take a road trip together. They drive the 2,500 miles.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's a long fucking way.
It's a long way. And yes, you know, a lot of people are saying, first of all, a lot of people came out and said, I think the dad knew about it.
Right.
Whether he knew about it after the fact, I don't know. I can tell you this. There are some families out there where they don't see their kids a whole lot. And I could see, as a father of someone that, you know, close to that age, I could see me saying, you know what? I'm going to fly down there and take a ride back with my son. We're going to do a road trip. That's not impossible.
It's not impossible.
And you know, we don't know their relationship. We don't know if they really had a lot of time they could spend together growing up. Maybe his dad just missed his son.
Well, we don't know if he gave him some bullshit excuse.
Yeah.
To come ride with me.
Yeah, my car's acting funny. I don't want to get stuck funny. By myself.
I'm sick. I don't feel good. I need whatever the fuck. But
I can tell you this, when his dad was in the courtroom,
right,
when they were releasing this affidavit, his dad was looking at him with the same look that the parents of these beautiful young people that he killed were looking at him. It was a look of absolute disgust. And, you know, I don't know whether his dad knew about it, didn't know about it, but I don't believe it.
Hindsight, which is 2020, after the long road, ride, 2,500 mile ride or whatever it is back. I would expect that he would cooperate in some way. Now, if they think he had any type of involvement at all, they're going to charge his ass accessory after the fact or whatever it may be, or obstruction, whatever the charge may be. And they would do that just to get the dad to testify against him as to what he knows. But I don't think the dad, it's very strange, but this cat's strange. I don't think the dad had anything to do with it.
And I'll
other
say,
than now he's probably thinking, oh, fuck. So I can go out on a limb, y'all, and throw out this out there that you don't start murdering four people with a K-bar knife. Now they're going to be digging through this cat's whole entire history, anywhere he's ever lived, any unsolved murders. Or this crime doesn't appear to be sexual anyway. He didn't take the time to do that. There's no evidence of sexual assault. So it's something different. And we know he was picked on by girls in high school or whatever. But they're going to tear this dude's life apart. And they're doing it as we speak. And everywhere he's ever lived, they're looking at, you know, cold cases, DNA or whatever. I would be very, very shocked if he doesn't come back and catch another charge from somewhere.
100%. And I think that's where we're going to leave this.
Yeah.
Look, just real quick, Real Life Real Crime Daily is going to be coming at you three times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. It will be all current information. There'll be some different formats depending on the day, but it's going to be current crime all the time.
Absolutely. And we're going to keep you updated on this case as it develops. The next episode we're dropping with, you know, it's a pretty important case, absolutely important case. Most of them are going to be ongoing cases. And so on future episodes of Real Life Real Crime Daily, we're going to update you again.
Absolutely.
The hottest topics from Woody Overton and Jim Chapman's view.
And it's going to be released under the Real Life Real Crime umbrella. Right. So if you listen to this, you already know it. But it'll be wherever you get Real Life Real Crime. Real Life Real Crime is not going anywhere.
Nope.
It'll still be
you get your weekly drops.
Every Tuesday, you're still going to get your weekly drops. We're just bringing you a lot
of content. You call this a companion show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important. I mean, all these years I've been doing Real Life Real Crime, and everybody wants me, whether it's Gabby Petito, whoever, every time something came up, they say, you know, the national cover, so they ask my opinion on it. But Jim Chapman, being the researcher, the historian, the yin and my yang, and me just being me, we put it together, Real Life Real Crime Daily. We hope you enjoy it. Please share it and like it and all that good podcaster stuff we're supposed to say.
Yeah, and today we're going to drop this super fast, so it's going to be lightly edited. So if you hear something in there that Jim Chapman might have missed, don't worry about it. future episodes will be better edited. But we're getting to you now.
We came in at 5 o'clock this morning, and we wanted to get to y'all. We love y'all. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you. And I'm Woody Overton,
Jim Chapman,
and we're the host of Real Life, Real Crime Daily.
Real life, real crime, all the time. Peace.
Smoothie King asks, "What's that sound?" That's us shaking up your day with new SK Refreshers, made with real fruit, real juice, and a real boost of energy. All served over ice. Available at Baton Rouge area locations. 60 milligrams of caffeine in 20-ounce serving.
Medicaid members, keep your coverage. Update your address, email address, and cell phone number to receive information regarding your benefits. Act now. If you get a letter from Louisiana Medicaid, read it and respond as soon as possible. For more information or to update your info, call the number on your insurance card or visit healthy.la.gov. That's healthy.la.gov. Remember to update all required information before Medicaid deadlines so you don't lose your coverage.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.